looking through the Christadelphian magazine for 100 years ago this month is very thought-provoking. In April 1921, a number of articles were written in the magazine about the land of Palestine, as it was then known, and how they were beginning to settle the land, how the Jews at least were beginning to settle the land, and also some articles, quite disturbing articles, about the development of anti-Semitism in Europe. With hindsight, we know that both of these issues developed during the course of the 20th century, and we're still seeing developments in those two areas even now. Anyway, I'll read what it says in the magazine about the Jews and Zionism, and this is an article by Brother C.A. Labston, written in April 1921. He says, "The turning tide in Palestine. Sir Alfred Mond, who is not only a minister of the crown but a great captain of industry, has returned from his visit to Palestine overflowing with enthusiasm for the land and its possibilities. He describes Palestine as a neglected estate in pressing need of capital and labour. And he is supporting the raising of £5 million as Palestine National Loan. Mr. Joseph Cohen, speaking at one of Sir Alfred Mond's meetings, promised £5,000 towards that, and his example is being worthily followed. Writing in the Zionist Review, Sir Alfred says that the change that has come over the country during the short time that Sir Herbert Samuel's administration has been at work, that's to say about 7 months, is, by common consent, almost miraculous. Order is being introduced where there was chaos. Efficiency and enterprise where there was neglect and opposition to all progress. Instead of all the untold difficulties that opposed every effort at development under the old Turkish regime, with its endless delays and lack of modern legislation, there's now an administration on up-to-date lines, which is anxious to assist everyone, Muslim, Jew or Christian, who wishes to develop the country." Speaking in London on March 13, 1921, he exhorted the Jews in stirring terms. "I want to say to those who are young and energetic and vigorous, there's room in Palestine for people who will work, and for those with capital to establish themselves. There are warm hearts to receive you, a government ready to assist you, and a fine opportunity before you of building up a home for yourselves, your children, and your grandchildren for generations to come. Add the expressed confidence in God, and these are the words and spirits of Joshua after his visit to the land in advance of the children of Israel some 3,000 years ago." Further on in the same edition of the magazine, there's an article entitled "An Industrial Pharaoh and His Chariots." And it says that, according to the New York correspondent of the Times, the affairs of the Ford Motor Company are in an anxious condition in consequence of the resignation of some of the chief men connected with the concern. Mr. Klingensmith, the vice president and treasurer, who's been regarded as the financial brain of the concern, has issued a statement in which he declares that he has resigned because he is not in accord with some of the business policies contemplated by the company. And he is supported in this by Mr. Brownell, publicity director, and Mr. W.C. Anderson, head of the European department, both of whom have likewise resigned. "A potent cause of the present troubles in the Ford organisation," says the correspondent, "is said to be the anti-Jewish campaign conducted in the Dearborn Independent, a newspaper published in a suburb of Detroit, which is owned by Mr. Henry Ford." The correspondent mentions that a sum estimated at £23 million has had to be paid by the company to buy out certain minority stockholders. The Central News states, "Maurice Jest, known internationally as a theatrical producer, is suing Mr. Henry Ford for $5 million for an alleged libelous article contained in his anti-Semitic paper, The Dearborn Independent." The Jewish World of February 2nd said, The swift, almost dramatic turn reported in the fortunes of the Ford Company is really astonishing when taken into consideration with the anti-Semitic campaign in America for which Ford has been responsible. Before he launched his attacks on the Jews, this man's company was fabulously prosperous and he himself gigantically rich. Now there's been such a phenomenal slump in the motor industry that the firm has thousands of cars on hand which it can't sell and is seeking some millions of fresh capital to enable it to carry on. The cynic would laugh if we were to suggest that the misfortune has come as a result of persecuting Jews and that this industrial pharaoh, like his anti-Jewish prototype, is floundering in the Red Sea of financial trouble because of his wicked acts against our people, so we will not say anything of the sort. But we will venture to suggest instead that it is probable that if Ford had spent the time he has wasted over the nonsense of Nihilus and all the rest of the malignity which he has dished up against our people and the Dearborn Independent, if he spent that time in attending to his own business, he might have foreseen the slump conditions now prevailing there, and by providing for them have forestalled their efforts upon the great concern he's built up. Their effects upon the great concern he built up. The anti-Semitic movement in America has roused the indignation of ex-President Taft and many influential citizens, and a very strongly worded protest has been issued as a manifesto by the Committee of Religious Minorities, which has been formed to arouse a public moral sentiment in the interests of justice and fairness. The committee in their manifesto states that they are startled and humiliated by the outbreak of propaganda against the Jews in the United States. And it concludes by appealing to all people of goodwill to condemn every effort to arouse divisive passion against any of our fellow countrymen, to aid in eradicating racial prejudice and religious fanaticism, and to create a just and humane public sentiment that shall recognise the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, and shall demand that no men be denied the inalienable rights of freedom, of conscience and worship, because they belong to another race or profess a different faith. An even more influential manifesto has now been issued. Probably no document has contained such a list of distinguished names, not one of which is that of a Jew. It owes its origin to the public spirit and high ideals of Mr. John Spargo, a distinguished socialist publicist. President Wilson, of his own accord, requested his name to be added to the list of signatories, and while the president-elect, Mr. Harding, thought it advisable, in order to avoid creating a precedent, to withhold his name, he wished it be known that he would give no sanction to anything so narrow, so intolerant, or so un-American as the anti-Semitic movement. The protest begins with the words, "The undersigned citizens of Gentile birth and Christian faith view with profound regret and disapproval the appearance in this country of what is apparently an organised campaign of anti-Semitism, conducted in close conformity to and cooperation with similar campaigns in Europe. We regret exceedingly the publication of a number of books, pamphlets and newspaper articles designed to foster distrust and suspicion of our fellow citizens of Jewish ancestry and faith, distrust and suspicion of their loyalty and their patriotism. Inducement from inside and persecution and pressure outside the land are stimulating Jewish emigration from Russia. In Georgia, which is the natural exit in South Russia, blockades are established to prevent Jews leaving and entering the country. Zionism as a subject of private or public speech is forbidden under penalty of death or penal servitude. Yet these risks are run, and thousands of young Jews are waiting in Georgia for any opportunity to slip through the cordon. In Lithuania, Austria, Poland and Germany, oppression and murder of Jews are reported, and Eastern Jews are being expelled from Paris. Recent news from March the 11th is that the League of Nations, at the instance of Mr. Balfour, has successfully intervened to prevent the threatened expulsion of Jews from Austria." The editorial goes on to talk about the Middle East Department. It says, there is prospect of the formation of a Middle East Department, which would of course include Palestine in its scope. The editor of Palestine hails the change as needful for the special attention required in the land's growing importance, while the Zionist review fears that Palestine may be less well served when it's included among the host of crown colonies and protectorates. The Jewish Chronicle is sympathetic and all hail the proposal to put Mr. W. Ormsby Gore in charge of the new department with approval and enthusiasm. He has felt, says the Jewish Chronicle, the fascination of the wonderful lands of which he would be in charge. He has not only loved them, he has worked in them and for them. He possesses an intimate knowledge of their lives and possibilities and has won the regard of Arab and Jew alike. And above all, from the Jewish standpoint, he long ago came to sympathise with Zionist aspirations and laboured for the realisation of our Jewish hopes, and has combined a lofty idealism with practical grasp of realities and the way to achieve them. We remember with respect and pleasure that Mr. Ormsby Gore is not ashamed or afraid to declare in the House of Commons that he believes in the prophet, and that God is working in present-day events in Palestine. The Women's International Zionist Organisation has received from New Zealand an offer to set up in Jerusalem a centre for children's welfare. The offer has been accepted, and after certain special further training, two nurses will proceed to Palestine. The Women's International Zionist Organisation hopes that other women's Zionist societies will follow the example of that in Auckland, for the streets of Jerusalem are even now full of boys and girls, many of whom are in sad need of wide tendance. The Zionist Conference recently held in Canada passed a resolution to form a board for colonisation and liquidation of Jewish farmers of West Canada who desire to settle in Palestine. Amid enthusiastic applause, the delegate of the Jewish farmers in Western Canada announced that about 300 well-to-do Jewish farmers were ready to emigrate to Palestine, provided that the Canadian Zionist organisation established a special department to obtain the money owing to them by their various creditors and to liquidate their funds. The resolution to found such a department under the name given was passed unanimously. The establishment is announced in New York of the Palestine Steamship Company with a capital of $500,000. The first steamer of the line has already left for the Holy Land. It is stated to be flying as a house flag the blue and white Zionist ensign with the arms of David superimposed. Meanwhile, an Arab editor of the Jerusalem newspaper Al Aqsa has been sentenced to 1 month's imprisonment and a fine of 50, I don't know what that currency is, for printing an inflammatory article about the alleged hatred of all Arabs towards the Jews. A cable from Jerusalem reports that a number of leading sheikhs and Arab notables were received by Sir Herbert Samuel, and they expressed satisfaction with the English administration and asked the High Commissioner to disregard the demands of the self-appointed Arab spokesman.